ain't got no use for. I got my good horses, a fine saddle, my guns, and a good knife. What else do I need? Nothing. Not a thing. You desire a roof over your head. Woman, I can't hardly sleep under no damn roof. Not for no length of time. It hems me in, makes me nervous when I can't look up at the stars. You're a fine woman, Melody. I believe that. A look or two. You're about as easy on the eyes as any female I ever seen. But I ain't the man for you. I gotta say that I'm prideful you like me. Any man who wouldn't be is a pure damn fool. So let's just be friends. No more than that. 'Cause it can't be, Melody. You and me, it just can't be. He turned and walked away. Richard stepped out of the shadows, moving quietly in his fringed buckskins. Melody turned to face him. You heard, Richard? Not intentionally, Melody. I was bringing you a cup of coffee and a biscuit when I heard you talking. I didn't want to interrupt, Preacher. He was telling you the truth, Melody. Heed his words. She took the tin cup and the biscuit with thanks. I've never had a man affect me the way he does, Richard. And I've never said that to anybody. Melody, I had a pet wolf once. I raised it from a cub. Found it when I was summering on my grandfather's farm in the country. I loved that wolf. But I had to let it go. I cried like a baby, but I still turned it loose. It belonged to nature. It was a wild thing, just like Preacher. This is where he belongs, and he knows it. Just like that wolf longed to be free. I truly believe that wild animal loved me in its own way, but it loved the land more. I finally saw that and let it return to its rightful heritage. Richard saw that Melody was crying, silent tears streaming down her cheeks. He stood for a moment, then turned away and walked back to their wagon. Preacher was in the saddle, restlessly walking Hammer up one side and down the other of the wagon train. Faint streaks of gray were slowly highlighting the eastern horizon. He stopped by the Jigaw wagon. Trapper Jim sat on the seat, the reins in his big, work-hardened hands. "Are ye filled with excitement and wonderment at the journey ahead?" Jim said with a twinkle in his eyes. "Where'd ye hear that?" "One of the movers said it about 15 minutes ago. I like to have fell off in this seat. What I'm filled with is coffee and biscuits and fatback. You et?" "A right good meal. One of the movers hailed me and fed me. Right nice folks. Preacher, I had me a run-in with that boy called Avery. Last evening. He's gonna cause us some woe, I'm feared." "I got the same thoughts. What'd he do?" "Sassed me right smart. I was of a mind to box his ears, but if I'd have done that, I'd probably had to kill his pa. He was a-watching close. Shooting a man wouldn't have been no way to start off a trip." "It would have spoiled this evening for sure," Preacher agreed. "Yeah," he sighed. "The boy's gonna be trouble. I gleaned that right off. Swift thinks so, too. He told me he come close to banishing the wagon from the train, but he just couldn't do it in the middle of hostile country. You might have to do it, Preacher. Some of the other movers wanted to call a meeting here at the fort and discharge the family. Since others talked them out of it. I guess we'll cross that river when it comes time." Preacher lifted the reins. "Be shoving off in a few. Talk to you later." "I'll sure be creeping along," Jim said with an easy grin. All filled with wonderment and excitement. Preacher laughed and moved up the line. "Get the kids that's riding into the wagons," he yelled. Preacher moved up to the rear of another wagon. "Replace that rope on your grease bucket, Sanders," he told the man standing beside the oxen. "You'll love it for the day's gone." At another wagon, he said, "Secure your canvas back here, Smithers. A good gust of wind and she'll rip and sail clear to the blue waters. Wagon Master Swift was mounted on a fine-looking black. He blew his bugle and called, "All know that those not yet ready to take their place in the line of march must fall to the dusty rear for this day. Get in place." "All fires out," Preacher yelled. Preacher eyeballed Lieutenant Maxwell Smith, all decked out in his dress uniform, as he rode out of the fort on his pony, a-bouncing up and down on his silly little saddle like the British is trained to do. "Count your young'uns," Preacher yelled. "Drovers to the livestock in the rear," Swift yelled and tooted on his bugle again. "That damn bugle is going to get old before this journey is done," Preacher muttered. Edmund and Richard rode up, all splendid in their new buckskins and wide-brimmed hats. Preacher noticed that Bible thumpers they may be, but they were both armed with a brace of pistols and rifles in the boot. As dawn split the skies, Edmund took off his hat, waved it over his head, and yelled, "Onward to our western destiny!" He jerked on the reins. His horse reared up, and Edmund fell out of the saddle, landing on his butt on the ground. "Lord, give me strength," Preacher said. Book 2. 1. If God will only forgive me this time and let me off, I will leave the country day after tomorrow, and be damned if I ever come into it again. John Coulter, at Lease's Fort on the Yellowstone River, 1810. "Did he ever return, Preacher?" Swift asked, after Preacher had told him about John Coulter and his promise to God. The men were riding together, ranging ahead of the slowly plodding oxen. "Nope, he died in St. Louis a few years later. He was a hell of a man, though. I never knowed him, but nearly everyone speaks highly of him. He was captured twice and tortured by the Blackfeet, and both times he broke loose and escaped. One time he ran naked for miles after they'd tortured him. Finally hid out in a river. I'd like to have known him. I think he was probably a hell of a man." "What are you going to do after the train is safely placed in Oregon Territory, Preacher?"
"Head back just as fast as I can. You?"
"I'm going back to take another train through. There's good money to be had doing this sort of work, and I like the open skies of the trail."
"Lots of folks want to come out here, eh?"
"Thousands."
"Plum depressing."
They were on the south side of the Snake River. Across the river to the north lay the Snake River Plain, lava beds and totally inhospitable terrain. They would not cross the Snake for several weeks, and that was if nothing went wrong. For the first several days, it would amount to shakedown. The movers would adjust to life on the trail, and each would find their place in the long train. Those in command could pinpoint the troublemakers and the whiners and complainers. All would soon know if the repairs made back at the fort would hold. The first several days passed uneventfully. The weather was near perfect, and the wagon train soon settled into a routine. In 4 days, Preacher figured they had covered about 35 miles. He could ask for no better than that. Preacher was not worried about Bum and Red Hand attacking this close to the fort. They would wait until the train was a good 100 miles out, then they would make their move. And they were about. Preacher had reined it out far and picked up their sign. Bum and Red Hand had gone on ahead to pick out their ambush site, leaving scouts behind to watch the train for weak points. Soon they would start harassing the train. Preacher was up early the morning of the 6th day out, earlier than usual. He had quickly put a stop to the sentries' habit of discharging their rifles at 4 o'clock in the morning to awaken the encampment. The first time they did it, he damn near shot a man.
"Toot on that goddamn bugle to wake folks up," he told Swift. "I don't want no guns going off in my ear at 4 o'clock in the morning."
Preacher wasn't sure why he awakened so early, but many of his hunches had kept him alive in the wilderness,
and he never questioned them. Preacher moved silently past the sleepers, most of whom slept under their wagons, for the bed of any wagon was filled with precious possessions the movers had carefully packed, from wood-burning stoves to coffee grinders to violins. They took whatever they could, for supplies were very scarce and very expensive on the coast. Preacher stopped and gazed out at the blackness of night. Storm clouds had moved in during the night, and the stars and moon were unseen this early morning. But something was out there in the darkness, something that had triggered the mountain man's survival instincts and brought him out of a sleep. He wasn't sure, but Preacher had an idea that Bum or Red Hand was about to make a move. Probably to slip in, cut a throat, or grab a child, and leave without disturbing anyone's sleep. There. Preacher's eyes focused on a very slight movement in the gloom. Was that object, whatever it might be, there the night before? No. He stood motionless just outside the circled wagons, standing beside one of the nearly 6-foot-high rear wheels, nearly 2 feet higher than the front wheels. The front wheels were smaller to allow for sharp turns. The object that Preacher had spotted moved ever so slightly. Preacher smiled and quietly pulled out his long bladed knife from its sheath. Preacher opined to himself that he'd been playing at this game longer than that fella out there in the night, and doing a better job of it. He was still alive, wasn't he? Preacher motionlessly stayed his position, holding the big bladed knife close to his leg, to prevent any glimmer of light from reflecting off the polished metal. The heavy blade held edge up for a gut cut. The man Preacher watched move closer to the encircled wagons, moving expertly and soundlessly on moccasin feet. Preacher caught the glint of faint light off a blade. Come to do some dirty work, eh? Preacher thought. Well, just come a little bit closer and you'll find your work is going to be a tad more difficult than you figured. The man made the circle of wagons with one final and swift dash. Preacher could smell the grease and smoke on the half-naked flesh of the renegade Indian. The buck took one more step and grunted in surprise as his eyes picked out the shape of Preacher, standing not 2 feet from him. It was the last sound the Indian ever made. Preacher whipped his knife and laid the razor-sharp blade under the Indian's jaw, cutting off any further sound from the savage throat. He grabbed the Indian by the hair and soundlessly lowered him to the dewy ground. Not one mover had heard a thing, even though an entire family of husband and wife and 2 kids was sleeping under the wagon not 5 feet from the death scene. Preacher stood for a moment, waiting to see if the renegade had come alone or had some help waiting for him in the night. After several moments, Preacher concluded the buck had been working alone. He relaxed some. Preacher squatted down and contemplated on whether to scalp the renegade. He decided against it. These movers might think him to be a terrible savage if he'd done that. Most of them thought that anyway. Preacher wiped his blade clean on the Indian's leggings. He left the body where it was and walked off toward the center of the encirclement for some coffee. He smiled, figuring it was going to be right interesting in a few minutes, just as soon as Swift tooted on his bugle. Preacher almost scared the crap, literally, out of the man whose job it was to keep a small fire burning and the coffee hot for the sentries when he approached him as silent as a ghost and said, "Howdy." "Lord God," the mover said, whirling around his rifle at the ready. "You took 10 years off my life. You wouldn't have had 10 seconds left if I'd been a hostile," Preacher told him. "Dwell on that for a time." Preacher squatted down and took a tin cup and poured it full of strong coffee. "I figure it's near about 4 o'clock. You got airy watch?" The mover reached into a vest pocket, clicked open the lid, and consulted his timepiece. "5 minutes till 4, he said. My woman made pan bread last evening. It's there, he pointed. And there's some jam to spread on it. Kind of you, Preacher said, helping himself. Where y'all from? Ohio. Lost my farm when the Depression struck. Couldn't sell my pigs. I went bust. Had to do something, and this seemed like the thing to do. Going to the promised land, eh? Beats watching my woman and kids starve. I reckon. What's your name, Pilgrim? Prather. Well, Prather, let me give you some advice about guard work. Don't stand in one spot for very long. Move around. And when you're stationary, stay in the shadows. Move your eyes, not your whole body. We got people after us that can come into a camp like this, cut a throat, and be gone and won't nobody know they's done it till the body's found. I do not believe that, sir. Is that right? Preacher did not take umbrage at the words. One of the many things he'd learned about these Eastern people was that they thought they could flap off at the mouth and not be held to account for their remarks. Well, I reckon in about 2 minutes you're going to have to be eating them words. We'll see, Preacher chuckled. I see nothing amusing, Prather said. Neither will them folks sleeping warm in their blankets under that wagon yonder, I expect. But it might just teach them a hard lesson. You're a strange man, Preacher. I've been called worse. Preacher ate his pan bread and drank his coffee. Just about now, he said, as Swift tooted on his bugle. Holy Christ! A man yelled, and his wife began screaming, and the kids rolled out from under the wagon. Preacher guffawed and slapped his knee. I called it right, didn't I, Prather? There's a body of a savage over here, the mover yelled, and his throat's been cut. Preacher looked at Prather. Don't ever call me no liar again, Pilgrim. I don't like it. It's bad business out here in the wilderness. I cut that Injun's throat, cut it before he could cut yours or grab some child or jerk the hair off a woman. You got a lot to learn about this country, mover. You folks think you're going to a city that's got boardwalks and street lamps and the like. He laughed. You're all in for a surprise, you are. Preacher rose and walked over to the wagon, stepping over the tongue and pointing to the dead Indian. Red Hand's got a dozen different tribes in his bunch, all of them bad poison. But this one's a rogue Kiowa. See that raggedy sash hanging over his shoulder? That means at one time he was a principal dog, one of the 10 bravest men in the tribe, or wanted Red Hand to think he was. If he was a dog, he must have done something terrible to get kicked out of the whole damn tribe. How could he get this close without one of the sentries seeing him? A woman asked. Preacher smiled at her. You traveled 1,200 or so miles and still don't understand, do you, ma'am? The good Lord alone only knows how you folks made it this far. Preacher shook his head and walked away. Here now, sir, what about this dead savage? A man called after him. You want to bury him, hop to it. Was it up to me, I'd just roll him about 50 feet away from the wagon and leave him lay. Some of his own will come fetch him. If they don't, the buzzards or varmints will take care of him. That's disgusting, sir, a woman called. Practical is what it is. Preacher called over his shoulder and kept walking. In the years ahead, when thousands of movers would attempt either the Oregon or California trail, they would not be so kind to their own dead. Between 1837 and the late 1860s, more than 500,000 people would try those trails. It is not known exactly how many died, but 20,000 would not be an unlikely number. Many times wagon masters simply would not halt the train for a lengthy funeral, and the bodies were buried in very shallow graves, if they were lucky, or simply stretched out alongside the trail for the elements and the varmints. Old diaries have writings in them telling of the callousness toward the dead. People rolling or riding, or in most cases, walking across the trail, have written of witnessing human hands and feet and even heads sticking up out of the ground. And still they came. But the great adventure illusion had long been shattered. It was either broiling hot or bone-chilling cold. Across the plains, the dust would pile 3 or 4 inches thick inside the wagons. Animals and humans alike dropped dead from exhaustion, or lack of water, or disease. Wheels splintered and wagons collapsed on people, crushing them to death, or shattering bones so badly that the movers had to be knocked on the head, held down, and the limb crudely sawed off before gangrene set in. And still they came, by the thousands. In what is now Wyoming, the ruts of their passing wagons are still there, visible after a century and a half, hundreds of miles of them. Silent ghosts of the past, of humankind's insatiable urge to move, to settle, to strive for a better life. They rode and drove and walked through dust storms so violent they could not see the wagon in front of them. Cholera struck them hard, doing no small part to crowded campgrounds where bacteria thrived on mounds of garbage and excrement. Cholera killed by horrible degrees. Violent dehydration, uncontrollable diarrhea, vomiting, sweating, death. When cholera struck on the trail, many times those afflicted were abandoned by their fellow movers and left to die alone in the vast stillness of what many called the Big Lonesome. And still they came. Those who took the route to California faced hardships not known on the northern route to Oregon Territory. They faced deserts seemingly so cruel, many thought they had been guided straight to hell. Tongues became so swollen from thirst, people actually tore their lips off in panicked frenzy. Christianity received a lot of converts on the way west. Starvation took its toll. Canvas rotted or was ripped away, and when the oxen or cattle dropped dead, they were skinned and the hides used as a roof over the ribs of the wagon, until hunger drove the people to tear down their roofs and eat the hides. On occasion, some of the graves were dug up by scalawags in a train coming close behind, and the bodies robbed of rings. On very, very rare occasions, some reverted to cannibalism and dug up the bodies and ate them. But still, they came. 2. "He ain't a-coming back," Bum said to Red Hand. "Preacher got him. Bet on it." The renegade Indian looked into the distance and was silent for a moment. Red Hand was no friend of Preacher. Their paths had crossed on more than one occasion, with Red Hand coming out the loser each time. Red Hand knew from bitter experience that the mountain man called Preacher was a savage fighter and could be totally ruthless toward his enemies. Red Hand turned to face the outlaw Bum Kelly. "He was a dog warrior, one of the best in my band. I sent him to test Preacher, to see if he had lost any of his skills. He is not." The Indian smiled. "Now you send one of your men to kill Preacher on the trail while he scouts." Bum knew he was being tested by the renegade whose own people had banished him from the tribe. If he didn't send someone after Preacher, Red Hand and his men would just leave. And he needed the force of Red Hand's group if any attack against the train was to succeed. Bum had picked up 2 more men who were running from the law in California. Waller and a man named Seedy. He suspected Luke had sold them all out back at the fort. Not that the fool had much to tell anybody. "You're right," Bum told Red Hand. "That's what I'll do for a fact." "When?" the Indian demanded.
"Today."
Red Hand smiled. "Good. Good. Then when your man does not return, we shall be even, won't we?" Goddamn strange engine logic, Bum thought, but managing not to lose his smile. That's right, Red Hand. We'll be even.
Bum walked to the fire and poured coffee from a battered and blackened pot. He looked at his men, one at a time. Finally, he settled on one man.
Rod, pack you a kit for several days and go kill Preacher. Take him out on the trail away from the train. If you don't kill him, don't bother coming back. You understand that?
The outlaw nodded his head and walked to his horse, saddling up. He knew perfectly well that if he didn't kill the mountain man, he wouldn't be alive to even think about returning. With men like Preacher, you only get one chance. Sometimes not even that many. He put some pan bread in the pocket of a coat he'd taken from a dead man back up the trail and swung into the saddle. With rifle in hand, he rode away from the camp without a look back.
He won't be back, Moses said quietly, looking into his coffee cup. And you know it.
Maybe he'll get lucky, Beckman said, rubbing his leg.
Damn wound still bothered him.
And kill that goddamn preacher.
You're dreaming if and you believe that, Slug said. Rod was sent 'cause that damn engine didn't come back, that's all. You know how engines think.
You reckon Red Hand will go back down yonder and bury that buck? Leo asked.
Hell no, Bum said. This bunch don't pay much attention to their tribe's customs. Besides, we don't know for sure that he's dead.
He's dead, Beckman said flatly. And we all know it.
He went on a fool's mission with Preacher prowling around the train, and don't sell Trapper Jim short neither. He can be as mean as a cornered puma.
Shut up,
Bum warned him.
Preacher's just a man, Bull said. He's just one man. That's all.
Why? A mover asked Preacher as the train rolled along. Would one Indian attack an entire wagon train?
Yes, another asked, walking alongside Preacher's horse.
Why, that's foolish. If he'd been lucky, if his medicine had been good and he'd brung back a scalp or a woman for them to hop on, he'd have been a big man in his bunch, Preacher told him. Injuns slip into each other's camps all the time and steal horses and people. They've been doing it for hundreds of years. Slipping into an Indian camp is tough. Slipping into a wagon train full of pilgrims is easy. Unless someone like you is around. That's a fact. Preacher stood up in his stirrups. Little bit of a river up ahead. We got to cross it. Won't be no problem unless it's over the banks, and I don't think it is. See you boys. He rode up to the head of the train and walked his horse alongside the mounted Swift. Hold the wagons here, Swift, so's the animals won't smell the water and act up with it so near. I'll ford this river and check it out. You can rest your folks some while I'm gone. As rivers go, it wasn't supposed to be much of a river, but there had been a lot of rain that spring, and the winter had been terrible harsh with a lot of snow, so the rivers were running over their banks.
Well, Preacher said to Hammer, we're going to be here for a couple of days, old hoss.
He rode back to the train to break the bad news to Swift and the others.
Is this the best place you know of to cross? Swift asked.
Yep. Banks is too steep for miles up or down, and I've been up and down for miles.
He looked at Swift. Come on, have a look-see. Then you can decide whether you want to build rafts or try to rope and float them across.
I say, Richard said as he and Edmund rode up. May we accompany you, men?
Swift shrugged his shoulders.
Suits me. Let's go.
The river was high and full and running very fast.
Rocks? Swift asked.
No, Preacher told him. Like I said, Injuns been using this spot to cross for hundreds of years, and whether you believe it or not, they're some of the best engineers in the world.
What do you mean? Edmund asked.
Most of the roads in the United States started out to be engine trails. Then the white man come along and widened them for wagons. White man makes the mistake of thinking that engines is dumb. Engines is far from being dumb. They just don't think like we do.
Give me your ropes, boys. He tied them together using knots neither Richard nor Edmund had ever seen. Many trappers had worked on keel boats, and Preacher was no exception. And then tied one end to a sturdy tree. Preacher smiled and said, "See you directly, boys," and plunged Hammer into the waters. He held his rifle high above his head to at least keep the powder dry on one of his weapons. Hammer scrambled up the bank on the other side, and Preacher jumped off, securing the other end of the rope to a large tree. "Get your people to building them rafts," Preacher shouted across the water. "Start emptying wagons. We got to make them lighter. We'll build rafts and float their possessions across." Swift waved his hand and turned his horse. Preacher picketed Hammer and swiftly began drying out and reloading his pistols and his spare hawken. This was no time for wet powder, not with Bum and Red Hand liable to pop up at any minute. And Preacher knew Red Hand and how the renegade thought. Red Hand had lost one of his people, so that meant that he would expect Bum to send one of his men in. Injun logic. No way that any of those hooligans and ne'er-do-wells and Bum's gang would have the courage to try Preacher alone and face-to-face. So he would have to be doubly cautious at all times for an ambush or a sneak shot in the back. He quickly dried and readied his weapons, then called to Richard and Edmund. "First raft over, send my kid with it. I ain't a-crossing again." "We'll do, Preacher," Richard shouted, and turned his horse sharply on the slick bank. The horse started to slip as it struggled to keep its footing and failed, sliding slowly down into the river. Richard frantically waved one arm, the other hand gripping the saddle horn. "Well, if you're that anxious to join me," Preacher shouted, "come on across." He shook his head. "Goddamn pilgrims." While Richard retired to the bushes to strip down and dry off, Preacher built a fire and a lean-to for that night's shelter. Swift stayed on the other side, getting operations ready over there. It was not a complicated move, getting wagons across swollen rivers, but it was a dangerous one. "Does the river have a name?" Richard asked, stepping out of the bushes with leafy branches held in strategic places about his body. "Called the Raft," Preacher told him. "Just down the trail a few miles is what's called the California Trail. Some take that route, but she's a dangerous one. Swift done right in sticking with his trail." The sounds of axes working hard reached the two men. Men of the wagon train were busy chopping logs to build rafts. "Do you suppose this river was named the Raft because somebody once had to build a raft across it?" Richard asked. Preacher paused for a moment, a quizzical expression on his face. "I can't rightly say, but that's as good a reason as any, I reckon." "You say the route we're taking is the correct one, Preacher. But several back at the fort urged us to change our plans and take the California Trail. Why is that?" Preacher smiled. "Sure they did. But it wasn't done with no charity behind the words. The Hudson's Bay people is trying to keep as many settlers out as they can."
"Why?"
"Fur, Richard. They don't want to see pilgrims coming in and settling up the fur country. But when they told y'all this route was a bitch kitty, they wasn't lying about that, old hoss. But it ain't near about as bad as the California Trail. If we was to take the Southwest Trail that leads a body through rocks, sagebrush, greasewood, and smack into that god-awful Great Basin, and that's over 500 miles of hell. Dry, dry, Richard. Salt and baked clay. Mountains all around it that act like a damn white-hot mirror. Then you reach the Humboldt. It don't flow, it oozes. You eat dust instead of drinking water. Then, if you was to make it across that, and that's doubtful, you got the Sierra Nevadas to cross, and them mountains is tough, boy. Mighty tough." Richard excused himself and slipped back into the bushes to pull on his nearly dry long johns, then his buckskins. "And the way we're going?" he called. "It's bad, hoss. It's bad. Engines, rivers, storms. A lot of the time you people is going to spend with an axe in your hand clearing a way through for the wagons. There ain't no roads, Richard. Y'all got to cut your way through. Before then, before we turned across the Blue Mountains, you're going to see some of the wildest country you ever gazed upon. The south rim of the Snake. That's about 300 miles of rough. Then you cross the Blues. After that, you got about 250 miles that you got to raft down the Columbia and ride out some wild damn rapids, or about 250 miles that you can attempt to wagon through the Cascades. Only then will you see the Willamette Valley. And there'll be some in this train who won't see it, believe that.
So we have weeks still ahead of us?
Yeah, weeks if you're lucky. We have trouble and get caught in them Cascades in the fall, we gonna be real unlucky. You get caught up there when the snow comes, you liable to end up eating each other. And it's happened sooner or later. Some damn fool will get trapped, bet on it.
I would never resort to cannibalism.
You ain't never been hungry, Preacher said softly. I've come up on folks that was trying to make it cross in the winter that was pawing through the snow like an animal, eating grass and roots and bark off in the trees. If you can find grubs, eat them. They ain't bad, and some even say they's good for you. I don't care for them personal.
Those people you found, did they live?
None of the first bunch I found did. Two of the second bunch did. The others was too far gone for me to help. And the damn fools brung their kids with them. Terrible sight to behold, let me tell you that. And stupid, too.
They were trying to improve their lives by moving west, Preacher.
Well, they didn't, Preacher said shortly. I don't like burying kids. Ain't right. Crazy folks to set out in the middle of the summer heading for the blue water. You just can't tell some folks nothing.
Richard decided to drop the subject.
Hello, the shore!
A woman's voice reached them.
Preacher looked up. Melody. She waved. Preacher grunted.
Are you all right over there?
She called. Just peachy, Preacher muttered and ignored her.
Yes, we're fine, Melody, Richard shouted.
Then Melody started jumping up and down and pointing. She acted like she wanted to scream, but no words would come out. Preacher glanced at her and, without a word, grabbed his hawken and jumped for the bushes.
What is the matter with people? Richard said, looking across the water at Melody, leaping all around.
Indians!
Melody finally found her voice.
Where?
Richard called.
Behind you,
Melody shrieked.
We ain't neither no damn Injuns, the voice came from behind Richard. He turned around and stared at three of the most disreputable-looking men he had ever seen in all his life.
Well, the spokesman said, jerking a thumb at the man to his right. He is. Dupree's a Frenchie, and I'm called Beartooth. I'm a Purdee frontiersman. I bet you can't spell that word, Preacher said, stepping out of the bushes.
Why? Dupree shouted. Hell no, he can't spell it. He just learned to pronounce it a week ago.
He jumped off his pony and ran over to Preacher, grabbing him in a bear hug. The two men jumped around for a few seconds, each pounding on the other's back.
Nighthawk grunted, watching the antics of the two.
Beg pardon? Richard asked him.
The Indian sat his pony and stared at the missionary. He don't say much, Beartooth said, but he'll come when you call him to eat. How you been, Preacher?
Dollar be well, thaggy. You looking prosperous.
Looks don't always tell the story. Fur's about played out, Preacher. We didn't make enough to write home about. If I had a home to write to, that is.
When did you learn to write? Dupree asked. I've been reading what newspapers we could find to you for years.
Beartooth said, Yeah, but you read them in French, you idiot. I don't know what the hell's going on. I think you do it deliberate.
He looked back at Preacher.
You a guiding wagon trains now, Preacher?
Just this one. I sort of got roped into it, you might say, after the fight at Fort Hall.
What fight? Dupree asked.
Y'all heard about the epidemic?
No,
Beartooth said. And we've been clear to the Cascades this winter, sold our pelts over to Fort Vancouver and then headed east.
Pox wiped out the Blackfeet nearby.
Y'all light and set. We'll palaver later. We got to start getting these wagons of pilgrims across this stream here. If you was a mind to, you could help me.
What fight? Dupree asked.
What's in it for us if and we do have that? Beartooth asked.
Food cooked by a woman's hand.
That's good enough for me, Dupree said. He looked at Richard's nubby ear.
What happened to you, Pilgrim?
It's a long story, Richard replied. Nighthawk said. Eat first. Talk later.
3. While they waited for the first wagon, aided by raft and ropes, to begin the crossing, Beartooth said,
You watch when you get up close to the Blues. Them damn cayuses is on the prod for some reason. We had us a good fight a couple of weeks ago. Seems like of late, when the Injuns we've been friendly with for years has turned meaner than a grizzly. Them cayuses is all riled up about that new mission that was built last year, I think it was.
I heard about it, Preacher said. It's really there on the Oregon Trail.
Just north of it, right where the Walla Walla forks. Man by the name of Whitman built him a church there and is preaching the gospel to the savages. But them cayuses ain't taking to it real well.
Wagon coming, Edmund shouted across the water.
What the hell's he expect us to do? Dupree asked. Swim out there and pull it in?
How do you put up with these pilgrims, Preacher? They don't appear to know nothing.
I'm a patient man, boys, Preacher said with a straight face. I come upon these poor lost children and the Lord told me to help them. In a roundabout way. And you all know that I have the disposition of a saint and have never turned my back on a child of God in need of help.
Richard was listening, pure astonishment on his face. Nighthawk said, and rose to his feet, wandering off into the bushes.
What you is a lie, Beartooth told him. You the most cantankerous, ornery, sold up, and mean-spirited man I ever met. I bet you got you a skirt on that train. That's what I think.
Wagon coming, Edmund shrieked, panic in his voice.
Preacher looked up. Crap, he said, for the raft had broken free of the ropes and was turning round and round in the swirling waters. The mountain men jumped into the water and grabbed the ropes, straining with all their might to hold the raft. Richard, who was showing more savvy every day on the trail, grabbed the loose end that Dupree tossed him and quickly secured it to a tree. Preacher, Dupree, and Beartooth muscled the raft around and got the other end secured. Nighthawk jumped his pony into the water and trailed another rope across the small river so the fording could continue.
This rope's been cut, Dupree said, after climbing out of the river and shaking himself like a big dog.
The mountain men and Richard gathered around and looked at the rope. Cut halfway through and the strain done the rest, Preacher said.
But who?
He lifted his eyes and looked across the river. The young troublemaker. Avery stood on the other side, smirking at him.
Everything all right over there? Swift shouted.
Yeah, Preacher called.
Up to now, all the kid had done, and that was a plenty, was nonsense stuff. Just pranks, but mean pranks. He hadn't actually hurt anybody, but this was different. This could have resulted in a family losing everything they had, and maybe even lost a life.
Preacher, you know who cut this rope?
Nighthawk said, stringing together more words than he had all day.
I got me a pretty good idea. That smart aleck boy standing right yonder. He's going to get somebody killed before this trip is over. I got me a good notion to hogtie him and dump him in the back of his daddy's wagon for the rest of the trip.
Wagon coming across, Swift hollered.
Preacher waved it on, then turned to Richard. "Richard, you cross over and you and Edmund keep your eyes on that Avery boy. He's going to get somebody bad hurt or dead if this keeps up."
"You don't know that he did it, Preacher, although I certainly wouldn't put it past him.
Let's just say he's a likely candidate. Go on, let's get some wagons across this stream, and tell Swift to send a team over next. We can't muscle these damn wagons up this slope." The men worked all the rest of that day and managed to get 10 wagons, teams, and personal possessions across the river. As nightfall approached, Preacher called a halt, and the mountain men sank wearily to the ground.
"This is too damn much like work to suit me," Beartooth complained.
"I'm so hungry I could eat a raw skunk." A woman placed a heaping plate of meat and potatoes and dried apple pie in front of him. Beartooth grinned up at her and fell to eating.
"About the only thing that'll shut his mouth," Dupree said. "Tell us about the fight and the sickness and them that's after you, Preacher."
After they finished the first huge plates of food, Preacher told his friends all that had happened, right from the beginning, when he had found the missionaries.
"Mayhaps we could hire on this here train," Beartooth said later, after thanking the woman for bringing him his third plate of food.
She had looked at the bearded, shaggy-headed, and buckskin-clad man and walked away, shaking her head in disbelief.
"Tell you the truth, we could use the money."
"I don't know that they could pay much," Preacher leveled with him. "These folks are all pert near broke. What money they got, they have to dole it out careful. They got to have a poke to get by in the promised land till they get a crop in." The three mountain men looked at each other and reached a silent agreement.
"Oh, hell, Preacher," Dupree said. "You know we ain't gonna ride off and leave you in this mess alone. We'll just tag along for the vittles, if that's all they can pay."
"What you gonna do when the grub runs out?" Preacher asked with a grin. The mountain men had all been observing carefully the silent play between Melody and Preacher, mostly on Melody's part. She had pitched a fit to get over to be near him. Beartooth said,
"Well, we'll be like you, I reckon."
"How's that?"
"Live on love."
They worked for another full day and a half before all the wagons, teams, and possessions were across the river. The rest of that day was spent reloading the wagons and getting them trail ready.
"We've been lucky that no engines ain't fell up here on us," Dupree said, as the men sat over a small fire on the morning of the pullout from the banks of the river,
or some of Bum or Red Hand's people.
"Preacher, you get the idea that someone's a-watching us?"
Few others were awake except the sentries.
"Yeah, I get me a tingly feeling in my back when that happens, and I've had one since yesterday."
"Not Indians," Nighthawk, the Big Crow, said. "White man, wears long coat, fine thread."
"Well, damn your mean eyes," Beartooth told him. "Wasn't you gonna tell us?"
"I'm not your mother," the Crow said. Preacher grinned at the Crow.
"One man, Nighthawk?"
"Yes, very careful man. Afraid, I think."
"Now, how could you possibly know that?" Edmund said after listening for a moment.
"By the way he moves," Dupree told him. "His tracks will show if he's skittish. He's from Bum's bunch, then."
"Yeah," Preacher said, slurping at his coffee.
"Dupree, you guide these pilgrims on this day. I'm gonna lay back and watch the train go. Then do some hunting on my own."
"You take my hat and give me yourn. We'll swap horses, too. That ought to throw them off."
They were both dressed in buckskins and were nearly the same size, Dupree being only slightly taller than Preacher. When Swift tooted on his bugle, Nighthawk, Dupree, and Beartooth very nearly jumped out of their moccasins.
"Sweet baby Jesus," Dupree hollered, grabbing his hawken and jumping up. "What the hell's that all about?"
Preacher rolled over on his back and busted out laughing. Springing to his feet and wiping his eyes, he said, "That's how they wake people up. He'll toot it again to signal the train shoving off."
"I can think of a place where he can shove it," the usually taciturn Nighthawk said, settling back down.
The crow spoke perfect English when he wanted to. Before I joined the train, they woke the people up by firing their rifles in the air, Preacher informed his friends. These folks do have a sight to learn about the wilderness, Beartooth allowed. Preacher and Dupree exchanged hats, and Preacher slipped away from the campsite and into the woods long before dawn cut the sky. Nighthawk had already led Dupree's horse away and picketed it. Preacher sat on the ground, his back to a tree, and dozed until Swift honked his tooter and the train slowly pulled away. While the train was getting underway, with people shouting at oxen and mules, mothers squalling for their kids, and the wagons creaking and grumbling and rattling away, Preacher circled and came up on the spot where Nighthawk figured the outlaw to be. The crow wasn't off by 100 yards. Only problem was, he was gone. Preacher could see that his horse's droppings were still very fresh. So the man, whoever he was, hadn't been gone more than a few minutes. He had made a cold camp and had eaten some biscuits. Sloppy eater, Preacher muttered. Preacher ran back to his horse and swung into the saddle. Mounted, he backtracked and picked up the outlaw's trail. The mountain man rode with his rifle across the saddle horn, all senses working hard. Preacher soon found that the man he was tracking was either very sure of himself or just downright stupid. At no time did he find where the man had reined up just to listen and look around him. He just plowed on ahead. In the wilderness, that was a damn good way to get captured by Injuns and get slowly and very painfully dead. Preacher found where the man he tracked watered his horse and himself, propping his rifle up against a tree some yards from the stream. No way he could reach it with a single jump. This feller was downright ignorant. The man he tracked left the cover of timber and brush and moved his horse onto the trail the wagons were taking, and making as they went. Preacher swung in behind him, walking his horse. He was in no hurry to kill the man. It wouldn't be long before the train would hit the south rim of the Snake River. Actually, they were already in it, but the going was still relatively easy for the route, though that wouldn't last long. If Bum and his people were going to attack, they would either do it before the train hit the rugged south rim, or wait until they were between the rim and Blues. Preacher figured it would be the latter. Probably in the Blues itself, so's any patrol that come up on the ruins would blame it on the Cayuses. Preacher personal knew Chief Temsuki of the Cayuses, and got along with the tribe for the most part. He couldn't figure why they had turned violent. That Bible thumper who built the mission must have really riled them up. Preacher rode his horse and studied the tracks. The man he followed had been joined by at least 3 more riders, all of the horses shod. Ain't this sweet, Preacher said, dismounting and squatting down, the reins in his hand. The riders had stood and talked for a goodly time. Preacher found where someone had knocked out the remains from a pipe and found the butt of a soggy stogie. The riders resumed their trek west, and Preacher followed, soon discovering that the 3 new men were just as confident or stupid as the original rider. Their sign told him they never stopped to check their back trail or just to sit their saddles and listen. Stupid. Just plain stupid. Preacher grew more cautious. He was now up against 4 outlaws instead of just 1. Stupid and careless they might be, but 1 man against 4 was lousy odds any way a fella wanted to cut it. Preacher found a place to cut away south and into the timber, then a game trail that went due west, keeping him several 100 yards to the south of the wagon trail. He walked his horse now, staying in the grass that muffled the sound of his horse's hooves. He picked up a sound that was not of the wilderness and reined up. Sitting very still, he listened hard. There it was again, clearer this time. Voices came to him, but so faintly he could not make out any of the words.
He swung down from the saddle and checked his pistols, then took a third pistol from its saddle holster and stuck that one in his sash to the rear. He would have to make every shot count, but Preacher was used to doing that. He had left his bow and quiver of arrows back in the wagon that Trapper Jim was driving. He moved out, walking as silently as a ghost as he made his way through the timber and brush. The voices lost their muffled tone, and he could pick out words now.
"Help me kill that damned preacher, and Bum would sure welcome you into the gang for sure. I've been hearing about that man for 10 years.
Another voice came to him.
"I'm sick of it. It'd be worth killing him just to get folks to shut their fly traps a-talking about him."
Preacher smiled and listened. He held his hawking in his right hand, hammer back, and a 50-caliber pistol in his left hand, likewise cocked and ready to bang. The pistol was double-shotted, the twin balls capable of inflicting terrible damage upon a human body. The hawking was a warhorse of a weapon to fire one-handed, but Preacher was a warhorse of a man, and he'd done just that many times.
"What's so damn important about some lousy wagon train?"
another man questioned.
"Hell, them folks ain't got nothing worth stealing."
"This one do," Ron told him.
"'Sides, it's got some of the finest-looking white women this side of the muddy. How long's it been since you cast your eyes upon the naked flesh of a beautiful woman?"
"Lord, Lord," yet another man say.
"I'm getting all swole up just thinking about that."
"We'll just keep tagging along after the train," Rod said. "Bum and Red Hand ain't that far behind us. Between the four of us, we ought to be able to take out Preacher and them other nasty-looking men that joined him by the raft. Then, with them gone, the wagon'll be easy. They ain't nothing but a bunch of pilgrims and women and kids."
"What other men?" "Three trappers come up on the train back at the river."
"They don't look like much to me," Rod explained. Preacher grinned at that. Nighthawk and Beartooth and Dupree had roamed the mountains together for years. They were three of the toughest men Preacher had ever known. Besides Jedediah Smith and himself, Beartooth was the only other man Preacher personal knew who had actually killed an attacking grizzly with just his knife. There might have been others, and probably were, but Preacher didn't know them. If these four piss-poor rogues squatting down there by the trail thought they were the match for any mountain man Preacher knew, they were sadly and badly mistaken.
"White women," one of the men breathed. "I can't hardly wait. After we get through with them, we can swap them to the engines for horses and pelts."
"What about the kids?" another asked.
"Bum and Red Hand says we kill them. You boys got any problem with that?"
"No. Just grab the babies by the ankles and bash their brains out agin a wagon wheel or boulder. I've done it lots of times with engine brats. But 10-12-year-old girls makes for good hopping on."
"You know," one of the outlaws said, "I got me an idea. See how you like it, Rod? We could take them young girls down into California and sell them to slavers. I know people who'll pay top dollar for a fine-looking girl, especially blondes. They really bring a good piece of change."
"That ain't a bad idea," Rod said. "But that's up to Bum and Red Hand. I'll sure suggest it, though." Nice folks down there, Preacher thought. Real gentleman types. I ain't gonna have no trouble sleeping after putting lead into these rabid coyotes. Preacher moved closer still, his moccasins making only a faint whispering sound as he moved. He could now pick out shapes, but he wanted to get closer. This was going to be mainly pistol work, and he was still too far away by many yards for his short guns to be as effective as he would like.
"You say there's missionary people on this train, Rod?"
"Yeah, two of the finest-looking females you ever seen. Make your mouth water just gazing upon them. Hell, we've been chasing them for 500 miles. That's how fine they is. I got to see this. I can't hardly wait to see this." Preacher warbled a bird's call. None of the four men so much as looked around. Stupid, worthless trash, Preacher thought. Outlaw scum can't even tell the difference between a man's call and a real bird.
Mine echoed, "You idiots."
"Hell, let's ride," an outlaw declared.
"Hell, let's die,"
Preacher shouted and opened fire.
4. Preacher's yell startled them all. When he shot a big, lard-butted, pus-gutted ruffian in the belly with his 54 Hawken, that really got their attention. The outlaw folded up like he'd been kicked by a mule and hit the ground squalling and bellering, both hands holding his tore-up belly. Preacher fired his double-shotted pistol and the muzzle exploded in fire and smoke. Both balls struck Rod in the face, and suddenly the outlaw no longer had a face. He fell back dead without uttering a sound. Preacher dropped his Hawken and jerked out a pistol. It misfired, and he found himself facing two pistols ready to discharge. Preacher leaped back into the brush just as the outlaws fired. He rolled fast, then came to his feet holding his last charged pistol. One of the two remaining outlaws threw good sense to the breeze and came hollering and crashing and cussing into the brush after the mountain man. Preacher opened him up from belly to gullet with his knife. He wiped the blade on the dying man's jacket and charged his weapons. He took his time, working fast but carefully. The dying man watched him and used some of his last breath.
"He's here, Jason," he managed to gasp. "He done me in, I say. Oh, it hurt something fierce."
Preacher glanced at him and winked. "Have a pleasant journey to hell, child raper. Damn your cold black heart." But Preacher was gone, slithering away soundlessly, working his way north of the last man on the trail, who by now must be getting real nervous.
"Who are you?"
the last outlaw shouted.
"Some brigand?"
"Hell, join us. There's no point in any more shooting." Preacher was standing about 20 yards from the man by a tree. The man he'd belly shot with the Hawken was jerking and crying on the ground, but his cries were becoming weaker.
"It's Preacher."
The outlaw Preacher had opened up with his knife hollered weakly.
"I know I'd seen him somewheres afore. Kill him for me, Jason. Avenge me, boy. Avenge your old partner."
Preacher lifted his freshly charged and cocked pistol.
"Yeah, Jason," he said. "Why don't you do that?"
Jason whirled, his face pale with fright and with a very nervous trigger finger. His shot went wide. Preacher's did not. Preacher coolly fired, the ball striking the young man in the chest. He screamed, dropped his pistol, and went down, both hands holding his bloody chest, covering the mortal wound. Preacher charged his pistol, stood for a moment listening, and only then slowly walked over to the young man, guessing him to be in his early 20s. He stood over the man, his tanned and rugged face as set and hard as his eyes.
"Gonna be a big tough outlaw, huh, boy? Didn't quite work out the way you had it planned, did it?"
"The old devil take you," the young man gasped.
"Damn you to the pits of hell for killing me."
Preacher snorted.
"Well, if it wasn't me that put a ball in you, it'd have been someone else, I reckon. You got a ma you want to speak any last words to?"
"Hell with her and you." Preacher shook his head in disgust.
"You're real no good, ain't you?"
"It's getting dark."
"Gonna get a hell of a lot darker, boy. And you can trust me on that."
"I hate you."
"Man shouldn't go to meet his maker with hate in his heart. That's just another mark again, you lad."
"I still hate you."
"Whatever."
Preacher turned away and began gathering up the outlaws' horses. And they were good horses, too. That's one thing you could count on about outlaws. Due to their way of life, they had to have horses with a lot of bottom to them, so they always stole only the best.
"You ain't gonna leave me to die alone, is you?"
the young man called.
I thought you hated me.
I do. But I want somebody here when I pass.
I'll stay. But I ain't gonna get too close. I might get a hot foot when you expire. But Preacher was talking to a dead man. He closed the lad's staring eyes and with a sigh, dragged him and the one with no face off the trail and into the timber. Then he went to see if the one he'd carved on was still alive. He was, and moaning.
I hate you, the man said in a surprisingly strong voice.
His eyes were very bright with pain. This is getting to be like an echo, Preacher told him. You keep saying bad things about me, I ain't gonna say no words over y'all's resting spot.
You gonna bury us?
Yeah. I'll pile some rocks over you so the varmints can't worry you. You got every person you might want to know about your fate.
Damn bitchy wife and a shack full of squalling kids back in the Missouri bottoms around New Madrid. You should have stayed to home. Fine time to tell me that.
He closed his eyes, jerked once, then passed. Preacher piled them all into a natural depression and tossed rocks and small logs over their bodies until he had them covered best he could, or wanted to. He took off Dupree's hat and said, O Lord, here these misbegotten, worthless, trashy, no-count, and misguided souls is. Do whatever the hell you want to with them. Amen. He sat down and built a hat-sized fire and boiled some water for coffee. While that was heating up, he went through the possessions he'd taken from the outlaws' pockets. Between the four of them, they had $3.15 cash money. The glamorous life of an outlaw, Preacher said, and pocketed the money. Their sleeping blankets were all ragged and full of fleas, so he tossed them aside. But their saddlebags were filled with pocket watches and rings and brooches and all sorts of jewelry. Also some gold teeth which they'd pried out of the mouths of the dead they'd robbed. A real nice bunch of people, these four. Preacher took the ill-gotten booty and threw it all into the timber and brush. He sat for a time drinking his coffee and letting his nerves settle down. He knew there was no point in kidding himself. Bum and Red Hand were not going to give up simply because he had killed another of their gang. The quick way one of the gang, now lying dead, had recruited others showed him how easy it was to find those inclined to rob and rape and murder. The wilderness was not only attracting decent men and women and their families to settle and work the land and be good citizens, it was also attracting the thieves and murderers and the like. And it would only get worser, Preacher figured. Preacher carefully put out his fire, poured water on what remained, and stirred the ashes with a stick to make sure it was completely out. He squatted for a time, his mind busy on the problems facing the wagon train. He did not have one idea in all of Billy Hell how he was going to get all those wagons through and past the south rim and then across the snake. These pilgrims just didn't know what faced them. Preacher knew that the missionary Whitman had tried it, and he guessed succeeded the year before. But he'd been forced,